Good morning.
Good morning.
We're back in Luke chapter 10, surprise, surprise. And just continuing in the series of talking about what Jesus was talking about the very thing that you're talking about, which is awesome, which is this idea that there are people all around us. There is a harvest that Jesus is wanting to bring in. I don't know about you, but when in January of 2020, December of 2019, began to hear, okay, there's something going on in China, and they think maybe it might be spreading. And in January, they were all, you know, everybody has these predictions about the year. And when those started coming out in January of 2020, I was reading some of those, and they said, you're going to begin to hear some terms that you've never heard before, and you need to get familiar with those. And I was like, okay, great. You know, what are some of those? And so the first one they talked about was this social distancing. And I was like, well, that's just like an oxymoron, you know, like, you know, social distancing, you know, it's like, you know, as social is coming together and distancing is going apart. But, you know, how many of us are very familiar with this term now and, you know, the impact that that's had? And when I was a couple of weeks ago, when I was in Sydney visiting our staff there, and they were talking about just even the impact that this has had on young people today. It's just amazing, and it's just the reports that we're hearing from these campuses where, you know, students have spent the last couple of years locked down in their homes, and then they go to college, and they're in a dorm room, and they don't want to come out of their dorm room. You know, it's like the one time, I don't know about you, when I went to college, you know, the last place I went to was in my dorm room. I wanted to be, you know, out with everybody, you know, all the activity, and like to get people just to come out and to talk to one another is just a huge challenge today because of what, at a very formative time of their lives, these students have experienced. And so just the impact of this we see continuing to go on. And so, you know, we see these kinds of statistics occasionally. You know, it says that here this is talking about, you know, social isolation and its consequences. You know, 22% of adults say that they always or often feel lonely and isolated. So what's that telling us? That roughly a quarter of the population, one out of every four people you talk to, is feeling lonely, feeling isolated. And, you know, what an opportunity to connect with them for God's purposes. You know, 58% of those reported having, you know, mental health issues. 55% of those reported having even physical health issues based on this isolation and loneliness that they feel. And then you see these other statistics. 33% said it affected their ability to do their job. 49% said it affected their personal relationships. We're talking about people today who are looking or fearful of, you know, this idea of I want somebody to connect with me. And it's like, you know, we're sitting here thinking, you know, we'd like to connect with people, you know, for God's purposes. And then all these people are saying there are all these impacts that are going on in their life and just a perfect opportunity for the gospel. You know, the most amazing thing about this graphic right here, it's the thing that obviously none of you can see. It's the thing that's right here. You know when this research was done? 2018, before the pandemic. And so already there were things going on in our world that God, I believe, was, you know, he's sovereign, he's working on this, he's wanting to use for his purposes. And so it's just amazing when we think about that, and that's what we're going to be talking about this morning. Again, this idea that, you know, this is what we're here for, is to be equipped to be engaging our world, to reach Birmingham, to reach the world for Christ, which has been Briar Woods' mission for so long. And we're doing that from Luke chapter 10. So today we're looking at the principle of focus. And remember last week we talked about, you know, this big word contextualization. Probably could have a shorter word this week. So focus is the word that we're looking at. It's just the idea that I'm sure many of you have heard of, you know, real impact is going to come through consistent contact. And we know that from our parenting. We know that from, you know, any type in our work. We know that and understand that. So let's look at Luke chapter 10, verse 7, which says, and this is, again, Jesus giving these instructions to the 72 as they're going out to, minister in all these villages and places where he was about to go. It says, and remain in the same house. That's the phrase we're really focusing on today. Eating and drinking what they provide. For the laborer deserves his wages. Do not go from house to house. He uses an interesting word here in Luke chapter, in verse 7, because he's trying to get them focused on his disciples because he knew that the work they were going to be doing needed to have focus to have real impact. It's interesting there. He uses a word at the beginning of that verse that he's going to use again that's going to have, that has real significance to the disciples. He says there, remain in the house. He uses that word remain is the same word he's going to use again in John 15 when he says to abide. Now, we don't say that today. You know, I don't, you know, people say, you know, hey, where are you? Well, I'm abiding at home today. You know, it's just, that's not a common word to us. We say, you know, oh, I will stay at home today. I'm doing, you know, have these various things, but I'm going to remain at home. It's the idea of where you live, where you are, where you're staying, not just kind of like I occasionally go there. Like, I, you know, this past week, I left on Monday morning to go to Chicago and then to Indianapolis, and I came home Friday night. I can't say that I was abiding in my house this week. I didn't remain there. I was gone all week long. But, if, you know, if you're there, if there's consistent and present contact there and presence, then you say, yeah, this is where I'm abiding. You know, we call this our abode. In a sense, well, that's the word that Jesus is using here. Go and stay there. Have repeated relationship contact with these people. And so there are several things in that that we need to be able to see. First of all, is just the idea that Jesus knew that discouragement and difficulty was going to be the reality of their ministry. That, you know, as great as it is and all these wonderful things that Jesus is saying to them, he's already said to them, I'm sending you out as, you know, lambs, sheep in the midst of wolves. This is going to be difficult. And so he knew that that within them, as they're having this consistent contact, they're going to get discouraged. They're going to want to give up. They're going to say, this is kind of hard. I think I'll go over here and talk to some other people. And he's like, no, press through. Keep having these conversations with people. You know, 1 Corinthians 15:58 talks about be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. Paul just saying, hey, I know it's hard. This is really difficult. We're in a spiritual war. We kind of think, you know, somehow ministry is just going to be easy and beautiful and just everybody's going to feel good about it. And it's like, it's hard. It's really difficult. And Jesus knew that. And so he's helping them to continue on. You know, the same thing there in Galatians chapter 6 and in Romans chapter 5, where, you know, just the idea that persevering is difficult. You know, Paul talking about there in Galatians, you know, we'll reap if we don't grow weary. And, you know, Paul just, he knew what it was like, and he knows what it's like for us to be in these conversations, to talk as you were just, you know, earlier, that, you know, we're talking and we're sharing and we're engaging, and just to persevere in that. That just the desire is to want to give up. And then ultimately, you know, we can learn and we can see this in Jesus' strategy. You know, he could have had thousands. Evidently, he did have thousands of people around him. But he chose, it says even in Luke chapter 6 earlier, here in the same book, it says from all of those that were following him, he chose 12 to really invest in them, to really have this, you know, consistent, deeper contact with them. Well, we begin to say, okay, there's something to this. There is this idea of focus that we need to be thinking about, you know, where are the places and people, particularly, that we're having that consistent contact with. We can see it kind of play out in other ways. First of all, just in Jesus' ministry. I don't know how many of you, just think about the places where Jesus went there, particularly in Galilee. Occasionally, he would go down to Jerusalem, but mostly he was staying in Galilee. I don't know how many of you have had the opportunity to visit in that area, but even the towns and villages that he's sending them out to, and he mentions here in verse 13 and down to verse 15, he talks about Chorazin, Bethsaida, Capernaum. You know, you think, oh, those were just far-flung places, you know, that Jesus was visiting or he was sending these people to. It really was like, you know, Homewood, Vestavia, and Pelham. I mean, when you go, when you visit that area, it's like, oh, like I'm in Capernaum and I can see Chorazin from here. Or, you know, I can understand where Bethsaida is. It's really close. And so just the idea, Jesus was ministering in a very closed environment. And so when somebody was healed, and you wonder why there in like Mark chapter 1, it says that Jesus was healing people in Capernaum, and all of a sudden there was a line of people that, you know, took him all day to work through this line of people. You wonder what people coming from these other villages, you know, they have very little medical care. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, there's a guy over here, you know, that literally is half a mile away from us that's healing people. Let's tote our family member down there that's been sick to be healed. So it's very close environment that gave consistent contact, where Jesus could go to a village and it's like, yep, the word's going to spread to the next village very, very quickly. We see this in Paul's ministry. You know, when Paul first began to go out much more broadly than Jesus did to plant churches, kind of he went and planted churches, and basically from the text there in Acts, we see he would stay maybe a few weeks, and then he would move on. But what do we see is the trend of his ministry as it continues? He goes to Corinth and stays 18 months. He goes to Ephesus and stays 3 years. And so as his ministry continues, we see him evidently understanding this same principle, that more and better work is going to be done if there's a real sense of focus there for him. And then what about ministry today? You know, how does this apply to us? You know, even in the text here, we looked at this back at one of the very early weeks of our study. You know, Jesus was sending these people out to the places that he himself was about to go, which that in and of itself is repeated contact. It would have been, you know, you guys go to all these places, and then I'm going to go to these other places, and we'll cover more ground. It's like, no, go there, and then I'm going to come, and we'll follow up on that, and there'll be repeated contact within that. Well, today, I think for us, there are even some helpful resources that have begun to talk about this idea. One of them is Kyle Ottoman's book. It came out probably 2 months ago. It's called One Life at a, One at a Time. Kyle Ottoman, if you don't know, is the pastor of a Southeastern Christian Church in Louisville. It's massive, you know, I think 15,000 people that go to church there. And so you would think a church like that and, you know, just his ministry and his understanding of ministry would be, you know, all about the masses. I mean, just thousands of people. You go, it looks like, you know, just huge place, you know, where they have their worship services. He said he's grown to understand, no, really, it's about one person at a time. And so he talks about in their staff meeting, they don't ever talk about numbers. They talk about names. And so it's always about, you know, so-and-so is, this is what's going on with them. And you think, how do they do that with, you know, 15, 20,000 people, probably 30,000 people in the orbit of the church where they are? And he said, no, we're just committed to, this is going to be about one-on-one relationships and connecting with people. And they're seeing incredible fruit from that. So I told you, I think I even used this illustration in one of the first Sundays that we had together. You know, as we connect with people today, it's no longer this idea of connecting evangelistic or data points, religious data points, because those have largely been rejected. We talked about, you know, what people used to believe in a sense, and that we were helping them kind of connect to, and then the answer to that is Jesus. And there are people, there are still some people who would have these data points, but largely, that's particularly with younger people today, that's not the way it is. And so, if you remember, we talked about that their points today would be not, you know, I was created, but I define myself. And I create my own truth. I decide who I'm going to be. You know, I set the standard. Others have got to accept me or face justice for that, and that really God is the problem, and especially his followers. And then I just, you know, gave you the quote from Tim Keller where he talks about, you know, this is a situation that the church has never faced before. And so it's like, wow, this is a major issue that we've got to be thinking about. Well, if you're kind of putting two and two together there, it's like, you know, this thinking, that's just irrational. You know, it's like, where do people come from that think like that? You know, it's like, are they Americans? You know, it's like, are they from Mars? You know, where are these people and what are they like? Well, this is the point I think that we have to, where we have to zero in. And our understanding has to increase. Because what has got to happen is that relationships replace rationality. That's the paradigm shift that we've got to have. You know, largely evangelism for most of us, for most of our lives, really, although we called it personal evangelism, it could be largely impersonal. Meaning, I could just walk up to you and say, you know, hey, I'm so-and-so. We could sit next to each other on the plane and, you know, and just, you know, in a matter of minutes, just say, you know, hey, I'm a believer. Have you ever, you know, what about spiritual things? You know, what about Jesus? You have the Babylon Bee, you know, conversation that took place. Mm-hmm. And we could expect that, you know, something's going to come out of that, because what were we essentially doing? We were putting forth rational truths that made sense based on those dots that I had up here a moment ago that were largely accepted in our culture. Now those things are gone and rationality is gone. And so when somebody says today that I am a woman trapped in a man's body, then it's like, okay, that's just irrational. It's like, you know, that makes zero sense at all. In fact, I heard someone speaking this week and he said, you know, had you said that 40 years ago, if you'd gone to your doctor and said, you know, I am a woman trapped in a man's body, they would say, well, that's a problem. And the problem is, you know, with your feelings. So you need to go to a counselor or to a psychologist or maybe even a psychiatrist to deal with the problem that you have. It's the problem is you feel that, you think that, but that's not rational. If you went to the doctor today and said, I feel like I'm a woman trapped in a man's body, what would many doctors say to you? There's a problem. Well, they can't. That's right. But they said, that's a problem. And the problem is with your body. It's not with your feelings. Your feelings are right. It's your body that's wrong. So let's get about changing your body to match your feelings. Folks, we are living in an irrational world. And so the old expression that we've heard many, many, many times, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care, has never been truer than it is today. And so it's just that idea that they've got to know you before they're going to listen to you. There's got to be this sense of, okay, I see something in your life. It's not an acceptance of, okay, now I will think rationally. But it's that sense of, okay, you've got a life that is interesting. There's a patience. There's a peace. There's a joy. There's a love. There's some things that are just undeniable about your life. And so, yeah, I would be interested to listen to you. I've mentioned a couple times Rosaria Butterfield and her, I might have heard her story. She was a professor of literature at Syracuse. And, you know, she was in a committed lesbian relationship. She was, you know, the last thing that she wanted was any connection with Christians because, you know, she would get letters basically about things that she would write in the newspaper there. And, you know, she said it was always either people who were affirming me and agreeing with the agenda I was putting forward and saying that, you know, I was making good points, or it was Christians who were writing and saying I was an awful person. And so one day she got a letter from a pastor, and she said, you know, in her mind, all her mail fit into one of those two categories. And that she got a letter one day, and was like, okay, it doesn't fit a category. He's saying that I'm making some good points. He doesn't agree with me. He's just saying that I'm making some good points, but he's also saying he's a Christian. Like, it doesn't fit in my stacks. And then he followed up at the end by saying, you know, I'm going to try and make contact with you because my wife and I would love to have you over for dinner. And she was like, oh, my gosh. I don't even know what to do with that. But it was so intriguing. It's like, okay, wait a minute. There's something that's different about your life. So we can go back, and several of you mentioned those five characteristics that I put up last week, you know, that are typically the way people think today. When that's the perception, then we've got to step out of that perception, not to defend ourselves, but to say, no, just, I'd like to get to know you. I'm not going to fight with you. I'm not going to, you know, trade blow for blow here with you. That's not what Jesus said to do. You know, it's, you know, when someone hits you on the cheek, you turn the other cheek. What's that essentially mean? It's like, I'm not going to run from you. I'm not going to hit you. I'm going to stand right here, and we're going to talk, and we're going to build a relationship together. Well, the other thing that was said this week, and I think is so true, is that we need to open our homes before we open our Bibles with people. And that's kind of the steps in it. And so it's like, you know, hey, you want to have a Bible study? Probably not. Hey, we don't come over for dinner? Maybe. And those dinners, those connections, are going to be the opportunity for sharing the gospel. Scott, I really appreciated what you said, because I think that's the perfect illustration of what Rachel, it is, your daughter, is doing there with Cassette. What was the key word and what Scott said about that situation. Conversations, plural. It wasn't that Rachel went to Cassette and said, you know, hey, I'm a Christian, and, you know, here's the gospel, and, you know, do you want to pray to receive Christ? It was conversations over time. Started maybe first week or two of school. First week of school. That however many months ago that was, culminating or getting to a point where, okay, I might be willing to go to church with you. I've seen something in your life that warrants a deeper look. And so to go to church, okay. You know, it wasn't even at the end of church that she was just, you know, fell down on her knees at the altar and, you know, yes, Jesus is risen and I want him today. But like, okay, this is speaking to me. This is so far in her mind, probably out of left field for her. It's like, okay, these conversations are beginning to make sense. Well, we said last week, you know, the application, and I know this has become sort of the terror point of the, you know, the Sunday school lesson, like, oh, what's it going to be this week? I hope it's not anything too hard. You know, last week it was to ask someone around you, you know, just to engage with someone, to ask them, you know, what was meaningful to them. That was the whole idea we talked about last week, getting to know the people that you're around. Well, what is this week's then? Is talk to that same person again. Have focused contact. You know, one of the things that I think is true for us as evangelicals is that we, you know, coming out of some of the kind of the crusade mentality, crusades, not Campus Crusade necessarily, but the idea, the revivals of the past, is that we should be talking to everybody. You know, we should talk to everyone about the gospel. And when we have that idea, what that often translates into, you know, I'm supposed to talk to everybody. It's kind of real general, ambiguous almost at a level. When I think I'm supposed to talk to everybody, who do I end up talking to? Nobody. In that kind of, it's the reality in my life. You know, it's like, I should be talking to everybody, but then I really don't end up talking to anybody. And so my suggestion would be, what if every person here in this class just trusted God for two or three at the most people that over the next year you can have consistent contact with? What if I even said, I don't have the ability to do this, but what if I said, you're off the hook for sharing the gospel with anybody else over the next year, but you're going to pray every day for those two or three people. And then just as opportunities come, as you invite them or engage with them or talk with them, those are the people over the next year. It's just like an experiment. You know, let's just try it out. Two to three people over the next year. And maybe even you begin to share some of those names. Maybe that becomes some of the prayer time here. Hey, my two or three, could we pray this week for my two or three people? It's, you know, it's so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. Could y'all pray with me? Or maybe this week I'm going to have lunch with one of my three people. And would y'all pray on Tuesday when I go to lunch with this person that we just have some good conversation, good connection, take another step forward in that? Maybe you begin to even share and connect across boundaries or across groups in a sense, like, hey, you know, I'm going with one of my guys to play golf. Why don't you get one of your guys and let's go play golf together? Things like that over the next year. What do you think might happen over by this time next year if the group decided to do that? It'd be a problem. You know what the problem would be? Y'all have to go to the church and get a new Sunday school in. Because the people wouldn't fit in here. They would have been engaged by your lives and by who you are. This class would double over the next year. If we just said, you know, hey, let's just all, just bring two people, three at the most. Don't let anybody have more than three. You know, and engage with one another with those people in that way. You know, I really think there are some pretty simple evangelistic steps. If you say, you know, well, how does all this just work practically? I think it's three things. These three things right here. Just the first question. If you're willing to ask these three questions. You know, you want to get coffee together? Maybe somebody you work with, maybe somebody you know, or just a meal with me, or maybe come over to our house one night for dinner, or just some connection. Doesn't have to be a meal. I'm just using that representatively of just a beyond the normal connection with people. And then is that, and there will be multiples of those. And then it's, hey, would you be interested to meet my friends? Or maybe you find ways to connect to other people? Because, you know, if we're talking about these people who have not, are not in church and or are not Christians, then, you know, what's the bottom line? They're going to think you're weird. Just let's be honest. It's going to be awkward. They're going to think you're weird. And so they need to meet some more weird people. And so, you know, you have a dinner over at your house and they walk out of the house with you and some other people here in the class. They're like, oh, there's more than one of these weird people. You know, those other people, they're kind of weird as well. But it's interesting. Their lives, the things that they share together. And then it's ultimately, hey, do you want to study the Bible with me? Because and the Bible will speak to people. It's just amazing how that takes place. If you're willing with your two or three people to ask these three questions over the course of the year, I can trust it will be amazing what God will do. Just give you one illustration of this and wrapping up. 10 years ago, I had a chance to meet this guy. He was a recent graduate from Auburn at that point. Pat's his name. And somehow, and I don't know how, I know this almost never happens, but he got through his 4 years at Auburn and didn't become a Christian. I know that that never happens, but it happened to Pat. You know, he was the one person who, you know, got through Auburn without becoming a Christian. He was from Birmingham, came back here to Birmingham to work. And in, you know, we got connected and he had some other friends who weren't Christians, but they were, all friends with, someone that was a friend of mine. And this person that they knew would have them over to eat dinner all the time. Just kind of, you know, young, recent college graduates. And so they're over for dinner. And my friend would, you know, kind of ask some spiritual questions, but they were there for the steaks and for the beer, honestly. I mean, it was just, you know, that was the draw for them. And, you know, Pat, he was, you know, clearly a, you know, functional agnostic. You know, he wouldn't say he was an atheist, but he was clearly an agnostic. He said, you know, growing up, I went to the doctor more than I went to church. He said, I didn't go to the doctor very much. And so he went to church almost never. And, you know, his favorite, you know, adjective, the one he used more than anything else, was just an F-bomb. You know, it's just like you would think that that was, you know, the chief adjective in the whole world. Just everything was F and this and F and that, you know. It's like, so he's an interesting guy. And we began to, you know, I told my friend, I said, you know, I think if you'll cook for them every week, they'd be willing to have a Bible study and for us to get together. And so we began to do that. So he'd cook and I'd lead a study with them. There were six of the guys that started off together. And it just gave us contact, gave us opportunity for consistent contact over an extended period of time. And I never will forget, you know, just the questions that Pat would ask as we were going through that. And we'd get lunch together outside the study and just, you know, to talk and kind of hear what's going on with his life. And, you know, he's in kind of the crucial point of, you know, getting out into the world and understanding what's going on. But we were going through the Gospel of John. And, you know, one of the things that was distinctive about Pat was his sense of he was in control of his life. And that's really what gave him peace, was this sense of, you know, I control my destiny. I do what it is that, you know, I want to do, and everything's got to line up with that. And we got to John chapter 6, and it came to verse 44, and it says that no one can come to the Father except that, or to me, except that the Father draw him. And, you know, the F-bombs did not stop when we started the Bible study. And so he said, wait a minute. This is saying it's not my decision. I said, you're exactly right. He said, I am effed. Because
sorry.
I am effed.
I have a lot of friends like that.
You know,
right,
I am, there's no chance for me. Because he said, you know, so this is saying that God has to work in me for me to be able to be a Christian. I thought, you got it, Pat. That's exactly what it said. He's like, oh my. Wow. And really, literally, in that moment, he's like, I want God to do that work in me. Such humility, such submission on his part. And so it's like, man, that's great. So, you know, it was over time he got married. You know, if you had picked probably 2 or 3 years prior to that, who would marry the daughter, the very pious, godly daughter of a Baptist minister? Pat would never been on the list. And so when he said, you know, hey, I'm dating this girl and this pastor's daughter, and I can't believe it either. You know, they've gotten married and they have two kids now. They're active members of faith. He's continued to lead in the Bible study that we have, and can tell you more about that later. But what was interesting in that, as, you know, Pat was began to grow and understand more and more and more, you know, he said, what about my brother? And he said, you know, Kent, you thought I was a hard case. My brother, Chris, is even further out than I was. I said, hey, man, God can do that work. He can do that work. And so, you know, we began to, you know, go to lunch some. You know, Chris was not going to come to the Bible study because he had heard, you know, what happens at that Bible study. But he was like, yeah, I'll go to lunch with you guys. And, you know, we began to talk. And, you know, Chris began to say, wow, Pat, you know, this guy's just like you. You know, he's crazy too. And, you know, we just kept having lunch, kept having lunch. Now Chris comes to the Bible study and is asking all those same questions and having all those same, you know, none of that happened overnight. All of that was consistent conversations. And so for us to be able to say, hey, can we trust God that he could work? He wants to do that. That's what it means to be in the harvest, is that we're going to go out and engage with people. And I would just ask that, you know, each of us think about the two or three people that we'd be willing to do that with over the next year. So let me pray for us. I know the bell already rang. Father, you are at work in our world today in such amazing ways. The things that we look at and think are disasters, and they are from a human perspective, are the places right where you're working. The places where you want to bring your light. You want to bring the message of grace in the gospel to bear in powerful ways. And so, Father, we ask that you would work, first of all, in each one of us, helping us to understand where you have placed us, the two or three people in our world. Maybe it's some of our children. Maybe it's our next-door neighbor. Maybe it's somebody we work with. But those people that you put on our hearts, that we could have consistent, focused interaction with over the next year. And Father, I pray, I beg you to bear fruit through the lives of these people. You've promised that you'll do that. We're just asking you to fulfill your promise. And Father, we look forward to seeing what you're going to do for your glory, not that people think we're great or this church is great, but that you're great. And we look forward to what you're going to do. We pray it all for Jesus' sake and in his name. Amen.